Did you know that an estimated 5 billion plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles are thrown away each year? Yeah, not great for our already struggling environment. That's why I'm so excited to talk about our partner today, Blue Land. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and the planet with the same powerful clean you're used to. And the concept is pretty simple. You just fill your reusable bottles with water, drop in the tablets, and wait for them to dissolve. I literally just tried out the laundry tablet, and instead of having to bring my huge container like I normally do down the hall, I just brought the one tablet and my clothes came out so clean, just as clean as normal. I'm fully on board. It just makes my life easier and I'm helping the environment. And the best part, Blue Land has a special offer for listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/dateable. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/dateable for 15% off. That's blueland.com/dateable to get 15% off.
The Dateable Podcast is an insider's look into modern dating that the Huffington Post calls one of the top 10 podcasts about love and sex. On each episode, we'll talk to real daters about everything from sex parties to sex droughts, date fails to diaper fetishes, and first moves to first loves. I'm your host, Yue Xu, former dating coach turned dating sociologist. You'll also hear from my co-host and producer, Julie Krafchik, as we explore this crazy dateable world.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Dateable, a show all about modern dating and beyond, because we dive into why people do the things they do and why people think the way they do. But this past week, beyond modern dating, was a very special week because it was Julie's birthday on Thursday. And this weekend we had an ounce of normalcy because we went up to wine country and did a whole day's worth of wine tasting with Julie and some of our friends. Of course, we were wearing masks. We were 6 feet apart-ish, and we were very careful. Everything was outdoors.
We were
very responsible.
Yes. I feel like, yeah, like I think it's like you are kind of in your trusted circle, but I didn't feel like we came in contact with anyone outside of our group. So
no.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. I was like a little nervous to go, as you know, and I was kind of like to you and other friends, I'm like, if you don't want to, I won't be offended.
Yeah.
I get that everyone has different comfort level. And I feel like everyone was like, yes, please. Like, can we do something that's like something, right?
Yeah, I think as long as we were outdoors, and I really appreciated at Jay Winery.
Vineyards, yeah.
It was like, so they do this cheese pairing, and normally you would have to do these shared plates, and they ended up giving everyone their own individual plates, mm-hmm. which is like, yay, more cheese for us. But that's the way it should be. No more shared plates.
Yeah.
And they pre-poured everything. So as soon as you sit down, that's it. That's the only human touch you have.
I mean, that one, I feel like we barely saw them. Like that one,
yeah.
The only, like, I guess caveat is it didn't feel as much like wine tastings. They weren't like coming around telling you about it. But at the end of the day, I'd still prefer to be safer than that. But
I agree.
Yeah, it was so fun. I mean, I feel like it was just like one of those days that it felt like pre-COVID, that we had a really good group too. Like mm-hmm. it was just, everyone was really funny. We got into this whole discussion at the second winery about like,
chickens. How do they fuck?
There were chickens there. So that's what started it, but we got into it, and luckily like our wine server was also like worked on a farm, so she gave us like the whole DL about all sorts of animals and how they mate, so it was quite educational.
I think we should stop beating around the bush and we should tell people what we learned, because it might sound dumb that we did this, we asked this question, but if we thought it, someone else out there is thinking it too. So we're going to save you asking a dumb question and we'll answer it for you. So we were very curious that if chickens can lay unfertilized eggs, and do you need a male and a female chicken at all times, or I guess a chicken and rooster at all times in order to get eggs? Because this all stemmed from the fact that our mutual friend acquire 2 chickens to put in her backyard in San Francisco. It's just very strange to begin with. But the answer
to this... It's
actually
quite popular, actually. A lot of people have chickens, but keep going.
In San Francisco?
Yeah, I know a bunch of people that do.
What the fuck?
It's like a thing. It's a thing. But anyways, keep going. God, irrelevant.
I don't know what's happening in the city. Something's in the air. Like, everyone's trying to be farm to table and then also try to find the next big I don't know, app or whatever it is. It's like a little bit of the old, a little bit of the new. But so the answer is you can have a colony of lesbian chickens and they can just lay all the eggs they want, but none of them will be fertilized. So those can be used for consumption for us. Or a chicken has sex with the rooster, and then when she lays that egg, that will be a fertilized egg. But you won't know till the egg has been laid.
I feel like chickens are ahead of us. Like, they're just letting, like, anyone reproduce, right? Like, no matter what your sexuality is, it's kind of a beautiful thing when you stop to think about it.
I guess in a way, if you think about, like, women are freezing their eggs and they're not fertilized and then the looking situation. To get fertilized, is it sort of the same situation? Either way, I mean, apparently they do get it on if you do have a rooster. But on this particular farm, they keep the rooster in a room by itself and they only let him out when he's needed, which I think is fantastic.
Ooh, he's like the pimp of the group.
Well, or to serve the female chickens.
There we go. Women's empowerment angle.
Exactly. It's
you come out when I say so.
Yeah, it's not like he's horny. He's like, which of you bitches want to ride my cock? No, he's like, I'll wait till you guys are ready for
hey,
my
services. It should be. As it should be. I like it. I like it. Again, the evolved species here, the chickens.
Yeah, deep conversations on Julie's birthday.
I think also, I just want to point out another deep conversation because it made me think of it too. On the ride up, UA and I were in different cars. We had two cars that went up.
Yes.
And we heard Shaggy Boombastic Remix. That is actually out now on Spotify. Shaggy remixed his own song. But the reason I bring this up is
so meta.
So meta. But the best part was that in our Facebook happy hour that we did on Thursday, apparently in one of the rooms, there was this whole discussion. This is like deep thoughts of, you know, like when Backstreet Boys were saying, I want it that way. What way was that? They even said that Shaggy was the ultimate gaslighter because he was saying it wasn't me. But she saw me on the kitchen floor. Or bathroom floor? Is it kitchen floor? Bathroom floor?
Wait, no, kitchen. Wait.
Kitchen floor. But anyways, she saw me.
Bathroom floor would be a different story.
She saw me, but it wasn't me. Ultimate gaslighter.
Yes. And then I had to bring up our meatloaf mystery again when he said, I won't do that.
What
I will do anything for love, but I won't do that. Like, what is that? So really deep philosophical questions that keep us up at night. But I did learn something serious this weekend too, Julie.
Okay.
Not that this wasn't serious. This is all very educational. But I learned a lot about the cancel culture. And it's like something I keep hearing. And I know it's like if you're woke, you're in tune with what this phrase means. My boyfriend actually had to teach me what cancel culture meant, which really is just like if someone does something wrong and then you just kind of like dismiss them just for their actions right there, like one chance, and then you don't give them another chance again. And it's an interesting concept because what's happening right now with all, you know, with camera phones, you can catch people in the act, they get blasted on social media, and then these consequences are that they get fired or they get shamed or whatever. So the latest example is Michael Lofthouse, the CEO in San Francisco, who was caught on camera in Carmel Valley at a restaurant saying racial slurs to this Asian family, and it's disgusting what he's saying to them, and he's like just so drunk it's not even funny. So his video gets blasted, and now the guy has stepped down from his position as CEO, but all the comments are like, no, that's not enough, let's make sure, because he's British, they're like, let's make sure his visa's revoked, you know, deport him, and let's make sure he never finds another job again. And so this is like, this is the cancel culture.
Right.
Someone does something wrong and then you just cancel them. But my issue with all of this is this person's just going to keep hating Asians more and more.
Right.
Because he lost his job. If he loses his visa, then he's just going to hate Asians even more. It doesn't actually solve the problem. I wish there was like a rehab system for people who are caught doing something wrong, and then you follow them through their transformation of getting back on track. Because this is just not the way we can reconcile these issues. A racist will still be a racist. It's just that they're now an unemployed racist.
Yeah. It is so, but there's a, like, I think it's interesting because I think there's been a few podcasts too that have had this happen, that they've said the wrong thing or handled things in a different way. Won't say which ones, but it was like, it kind of like all hell broke loose and people really started like canceling hard. And I think though where some of the people that have had this happen have gone wrong though, is that they didn't just apologize. Like they kind of tried to like back themselves up. And I think at the end of the day, it almost like digs a deeper hole. So it's like, if you can just say you're sorry that this happened or someone felt this way, that's really all you can do. You can't go back in time. You can't change whatever it is. I think it's like, I'm trying, like, you know, it's like, it needs to feel authentic though. But did you see that San Francisco introduced the Karen Law, which I think is hilarious. Instead of spelling it K-A-R-E-N, it's C-A-R-E-N. And it's basically like calling up. It's like the Amy Cooper situation where she like called up the police being like, this black guy is attacking me. And it was like she had like an unleashed dog and he was doing nothing. Like those like false senses of, you know, racism and systemic racism, that's what the Karen Law is in San Francisco. But I think it's hilarious that they called it the Karen Law. I mean, you know, that's on purpose, right?
Yeah. And I'm also just so I feel really bad for people named Karen. I had to.
We know a really wonderful Karen in our Facebook group. Like,
we do. And now I can't look at that name the same way.
So unfortunate.
So I'm so sorry to all the nice Karens.
I know. We have your back, Karens.
We have your the good Karens. Maybe you should just change your name to Kat. Just once and for
Car.
All. Car. Just name yourself Care. Oh. There you go. That's a good one. But things are happening, right? That's a good thing. We're just trying to make sure that we're policing each other and that we are keeping each other in check. But once we do keep each other in check, there has to be consequences on both ends that we need to face. So that's all I'm saying. That's the only way I can't agree with cancel culture altogether. But I do think that you know, despite all of the learnings this weekend, I think we need to celebrate, in addition to your birthday, we also need to celebrate the CNN article that came out.
My dad finally hit me up and was like, congrats. I'm like, I've been doing this for like 4 years. But no,
seriously,
I'll take it, you know? I think it's hilarious. Well, I guess we'll get into the article, but like my mom messaged me that my cousin randomly saw it on CNN. And the article doesn't say dateable in the headline. So you have to like read through it. And it's just hilarious. She's like, why didn't you tell me? And I'm like, I don't know. You just don't know like when things are going to actually come out and all that. But yeah, I feel like my family, and you said yours too, like finally sees what's happening.
Final approval. My mom's always like, how's the radio show doing? I'm like, it's a podcast, Mom. She's like, yeah. How's the radio show doing?
Your mom was so cute, though, when I met her. She's like, I love that you guys are doing this podcast. Like, she's super for it.
She loves it. She just doesn't really get how we can make a living off of it, basically. But what was great is I woke up this morning and my boyfriend's like, oh, my friend just saw the CNN article you're in. So thank you, Patrick. I haven't met you yet. You sound amazing. He also lives in Hong Kong. So that's great.
Amazing.
You know, like
amazing.
It's really widespread. But I sent the article to my parents and they both gave me a thumbs up. So, you know, the ultimate Asian parent approval.
Oh, my God.
Thumbs up.
My parents were so excited. I was like, I have never seen them so excited about this. It was crazy. I think my dad was like, you're famous now. I'm like, let's not go this far.
Well, I never thought I would see our picture in CNN.
Oh, it's pretty impressive.
Fantastic. And we have to thank Saba, who wrote the article. We had such a fun chat with her, and she's been in our Facebook group, which is fantastic.
Right.
But ultimately, we need to thank Jamie, who is one of our loyal listeners,
Jamie,
who referred Saba to us. And Jamie, I'm so glad we met you last week for the first time. And we are so grateful for listeners like you. You are absolutely fantastic. Thank you.
I mean, I think this was like the most serendipitous moment because Saba just like direct messaged me through Facebook. It was like, hey, I've been in your Facebook group this whole time and I'm writing this article. I love you and Yue to like share your thoughts because you obviously have a lot. So, I mean, the article was amazing too. Definitely recommend reading it. If you just like search CNN, love in the time of coronavirus, I think it will come up. Or
and no, just CNN dateable.
Just CNN dateable those will come
two
up.
Two keywords are all you need.
But I think there was, you know what I loved about it? It was so positive because in addition to interviewing us, she interviewed a couple people that actually met people through this time. And they had positive love stories. I think so many times we can just get hung up on what we can't do. So it was really nice to just see it through a positive spin of how this time can really bring people together. We had one guy that joined the Facebook group that like shared like this most beautiful story. And like everyone was just like going crazy and loving it. Like that he like met his going to be husband on Facebook,
during this time.
Yeah, they like moved in together. They're like having a ceremony and people were just like, thank you. You know, we've had a few recent like success stories. So it's been nice to hear those in addition to, obviously, we don't want to like diminish that it's a tough time right now, but it's nice to hear the positives that are coming from it.
It just really reminds me of the advice my friend Julie Alexandra has given us is always go out on a rainy day. Because when it's not the most positive vibe outside, your chances of meeting someone may be less, but your chances of finding love increase. Because that one diamond in the rough who's also out while it's raining, you guys are going to connect right away. So I love that to this time of this pandemic too.
Totally. I love it. I think also, I would love your take on this, UA, because one of the members of our Facebook group wrote this and it got me thinking. Because I think one of his comments was that dating, like some of the, like even our episodes before coronavirus didn't feel as relevant anymore because everything has changed so much with COVID. And my initial reaction was like, okay, I can see that because it's like a different like landscape of just how people are dating. But when I really thought about it, the way I view modern dating from all the episodes we've done and just how entrenched we've been is that like 25% is tactics, like how you use apps, how you go on dates. And I think 75% of it is mindset. That's my personal take on it. I think like you can literally have two people that have identical profiles on a dating app, and I think their experiences will be very different based on how they perceive it. So of course, like there's differences right now. No one's going to deny that there's like people aren't getting as physical as fast, or like where you go on dates is different and you're not meeting people in real life as much. No one's going to deny that. But I'd love your take because I think there's a lot that holds up, if not more, with this emphasis on mindset.
You know, that is a very interesting point that he makes. And then I really like the point that you're making too. When I was a dating coach, every client came to me and said, I have this very unique situation that no matter how many blogs you write about other people going through similar situations, you have to listen to mine because it's so unique. And then I would listen to their situation. I'm like, it's actually not that unique. So I think what happens with dating a lot of times is that we don't think certain things apply to us because it's not specific for us right now. During this pandemic, listening to a couple matching on an app doesn't apply to me because I'm not on dating apps. But I think when you step back and look at the big picture, all of our episodes are about how people connect. And that's it. You're totally right. It's a perspective and it's a mindset that anybody can take away and learn from it. It's not the details of how someone met and how they fell in love. It's on a wider level of how can I learn from this story, how I can better connect with others. I completely agree with you. I think it's all still applicable. It's just the tactical stuff that doesn't really apply.
Or it's going to change, you can say that, evolve.
It's going to change, yeah. But you could say that for anything. You could say, well, those two people in that story, their story is exactly like mine, but they don't look like me, so it doesn't apply to me. I mean, it's kind of the same thing. There are always going to be variables, but it's more about what you can take away from other people, not so much how you can apply yourself to other people's stories.
Let's be honest, on the tactical side, we've heard people bitch for years now that they don't meet in real life anymore. So if anything, now just more people are concentrated on apps. So you would actually kind of argue that a lot of the tactics on apps have not changed at all. If anything, it's just like gotten a little deeper and more real. So yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say there's no difference. There's obviously differences, but I don't think that things like it has, we said on our last episode, actually the bonus episode, that I think UA, you had a good point, is like, while there's trends, the reality is most of the stuff is going to stay relatively the same. There might be mm-hmm. a little, some shifts that happen, but if you could take like 1% of what's working in this new world and lose 1% that wasn't working in the old world, that's a win. And I think that really does hold true here.
Yeah. Keep chugging along. Listen to other people's perspectives, absorb them, learn from them. And then we just keep excelling forward. This is what progress is in society.
Yeah, which is actually interesting too, because it kind of brings me up to something else that I had a mutual friend reach out to me and connect me with this lovely woman, Julia, who's been doing quarantine project. And I signed up for it because I thought it was fascinating. It's called the Quarantine cool. Love Project. And she actually, like, on her website, I just have to read this because I love it. It's going to be a while until you could walk up to someone at a bar. In the meantime, there's the Quarantine Love Project. So I think they actually started it as in-person events, but they pivoted, like you do. Again, it's not the change of the underlying, like, what they're trying goal. To accomplish.
Yes.
Exactly.
Right.
It's just a change of mechanics. Instead of hosting IRL events, they're now doing them online.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, they'll like match people up and they basically will send you a message. So they're kind of like the modern day Cupids. You basically will do like a 20-minute video date. And I mean, it's not like for profit or anything. Like, they're really just trying to like spread love right now, which I love. Yeah, it's so sweet. And I think one of the reasons why he connected us too is, I guess there's, no shocker, less men than women that have signed up. I feel like this always happens. But as soon as we say it, now all the men will come because they know there's like a surplus of women. So we're hoping that some more men can sign up. And I signed up today. It's super easy. You just fill out like a quick questionnaire. So definitely check out Quarantine Love Project and see if they're in your city, and let these modern day Cupids do their magic.
What's the website? QuarantineLoveProject.com?
Yep, that's it.
Okay, perfect. Easy. Easy breezy. Another website I'm going to throw out at you all during this quarantine. I know that you guys are doing a lot of online shopping, as am I. I've gotten really good at online shopping, but we put together an essentials list for dating during this time. And so we have a website for that. It's amazon.com/shop/dateablepodcast.
We're on the influencer program.
Look at this influence. Well, when you are the Ivy Leagues of podcasts, you have to influence, right? Reference to last week, if you remember. Amazon.com/shop/dateablepodcast. We basically made a list of essential gadgets and whatever to use for dating, for self-care, for sexy time, you know, the good stuff. And we have a book club in there as well of previous guests and their books. So it's a really, really comprehensive list.
So yeah, check it out. I love the book club. I feel like this is like the one way to find all our past guests who have had amazing books that they've shared.
Yeah.
And I love the vibrators. So I'll give a plug for that too.
Yeah, we both added our own stuff in there. Tested and true. So
you
I don't
can
know,
try.
Maybe it'd be a fun game if people go on there and just like attribute which one to whom. Like, oh yeah, Julie definitely put this
one on. I definitely put the magic wand. Everyone knows that. Everyone knows how much UA hates it and how much I love it.
And the calendar that's from Julie.
The calendar? That's UA's.
No, there is no calendar in there. Fools. Let's get to this episode. It's another bonus episode. We were on in a podcast called Kinda Dating, hosted by Natasha, who's fantastic. She is like in it. She's in dating. She comes from an Indian family, so she has that cultural influence into her dating life. And she's just so honest and raw with her retelling some of her dating stories. So we were on her show talking about some of the best and worst dating advice we've gotten.
Yeah, this is our Kinda Dateable collab.
Yeah, Kinda Dateable collab. That's correct. So here comes Natasha on Kinda Dating.
Guys, we've been wanting to make this happen for a really, really long time. The Dateable Kind of Dating collab. We're doing it.
Yes.
So excited.
We're kind of dateable.
I know.
Actually, new podcast of the making.
I really love that name. I think we're onto something. Guys, you know, you guys tell me if there's something you like to do for yours, but for us, we like to always ask every guest, single or in a relationship. Are you single or in a relationship?
I am single. I was revisiting something with an ex-boyfriend and recently decided to continue down a single path. So recently single, I guess.
Yes, ready to mingle in quarantine time.
Yes.
Try out that video dating.
Try out that virtual sex. We just had an episode about that.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Get it.
That's fun.
I'm in a relationship. I'm with my boyfriend for over a year and a half now and trying to navigate quarantine together.
Damn. Are you guys living together?
I mean, for now, for the quarantine, but as we start to loosen things up and the lockdown is starting to lift, I think we'll have to figure things out.
Yeah. And what about you, Natasha?
I am seeing someone. I'm actually at his house right now. Poor guy.
All your equipment.
Yeah, I brought it all over. I was like, all right, well, this is what we're doing now. So yeah.
And cool. I am married, just so you guys know. But I used to date a lot, so you know, whatever.
How long
that
have
means.
You been married for, Adam?
Over 2 years now.
Okay. Nice. All right. Still sort of a newlywed.
Yeah, not that long.
Love it. Love it. So today we're talking about. You guys tell us, what are we talking about?
What are we talking about? I think we should be talking about, because we've had so many seasons of Dateable and we've had so many great guests come on and tell us some really awesome dating tips. We also thought this is a good chance to not only talk about the good dating advice, but also the really terrible dating advice we've yes. gotten over the years. And we should just bring those out now and just like bury them somehow. You know, like it should be ceremonial. Let's just bury the really bad dating advice we've had.
And Natasha, I'm sure you've also had your share of really bad dating advice that you've heard on the podcast.
Oh my God. On the podcast, in life, it's like so many, so many things. Yeah, tons.
So what's your number one bad dating advice that you've heard?
I think the one that somehow I got flack for, which I don't even believe, I just was letting the guest speak, was don't have sex for 90 days.
Whoa. We had a guest on our podcast that said that too, actually.
Yeah. And I think though, because I think that they were two different guests.
Right.
Which is shocking to me because I'm like, there are more than one person out there who believes you should wait 90 days.
You know what's funny? Because we actually had one of our bad dating advice that we've gotten is the arbitrary 3-day rule. And I think mm-hmm. they both actually have a very similar theme to them, is this arbitrary number. Like, why 90 days? Why 3 dates? Like, why 3 days? Like, why does that matter at all?
And also, it just drives you crazy, doesn't it? Like, waiting 90 days for anything to happen, you start developing stories in your own mind. You end up having a conversation and a relationship with someone that does not exist. And that's the danger of waiting and just guessing. And like, in those 3 days or in those 90 days, anything could happen. So why, like, I just don't understand. Don't deprive yourself if that's something you want.
And what if the sex is so bad? Like, what if you go like 90 days and you are just like, this is my person, and then it's terrible and you can't come back from it?
Well, you know, I think an unfortunate part of sort of what society has fed, the narrative society has fed to women, is that our worth is determined by when we have sex. Like how quickly did she give it up? I mean, fucking Steve Harvey has a talk show on this and he still preaches this.
Yes.
That like a guy will value you more. And yes. I'm not saying, like I'm not here to advocate like, hey, bang anybody on your first date. My whole thing is if you want to on your first date or if you want to 3 months from now,
right.
the whole thing should be, do you want it? And only have sex when you want it. If that means in the first hour of meeting somebody, great. If that means 3 months,
right.
That's fine. It's just whenever, so you don't feel like, I mean, I'm sure you guys have also met girls like this. Like some of my girlfriends have felt, oh, it didn't work out. He was just using me for sex. And it's like, well, you won't feel like that if you feel like you did it because you wanted to make somebody like you.
That's a really great point, Natasha, because I think by having this wait period, it gives other people permission to judge you if you don't end up living to those 3 days or like 90 days. So it gives you the permission to slut shame yourself. We've had girls that write into the show and say, I slept with him on the first date. Am I going to be viewed as, you know, like just someone he's going to play around with, like a fuck buddy? And then it gives men the permission to judge you if you do sleep with them within those 3 days or 90 days or whatever it may be. So it's just another way for us to judge each other. And that's terrible.
Yeah, we had a guest on our podcast, Dr. Alexandra Solomon, who is phenomenal. If you haven't listened to those episodes or if you're new to our podcast via Natasha's, definitely check them out. But she had a really good comment because this came up. We actually had a live show. We had someone in the audience ask about if she slept with someone too soon, would he judge her? What would he think? Mm-hmm. And she's like, the problem of this statement is that it's coming from what would he think of me? Not what do I want to do? And yeah, there is a very different energy that's happening from that. And I think to Natasha, your point about feeling like, oh, someone didn't call me back because I slept with them too soon. If the energy is we're vibing, we want to sleep together, or maybe we're not there yet because we haven't built that connection versus like, I need to hold out so he stays interested. That's the energy that's probably causing someone not to come back, not that you slept with them too soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think we have a slight benefit of having the kind of dating engineer here, Adam, but like sometimes we ask him, like as the guy, like, what would you think, Adam? I know I already know what you think.
Yeah. So, well,
they don't know what you think.
I feel the same way you do about not having a specific number. I think there's no reason to put an arbitrary number on such a thing and so on. You know, I think people need to act how they feel inclined. If the girl really likes the guy and feels that, you know, she wants to do that with him and her judgment is saying, yes, let's do it, then have fun, you know, but be safe and whatever.
But like, would you judge a girl?
For not having sex with me on the first date?
No, like if it was too soon or too late or whatever.
Yeah, no, I mean, no, I would not. I mean, if anything, the guys are probably like, hey, this is cool. Like, I mean, I wouldn't imagine there'd be a lot of, you know, protesting on their end of things. like, no, please don't. Like, hopefully they would say no, so, if no was no, you know.
This happened to me a long time ago. I remember I met this guy. We had such a fantastic night. We got way too drunk, but that's another story. And well, actually, maybe it's not because it led to the story that I'm about to tell. And basically, we ended up sleeping together on the first date. And I actually don't remember a lot of that date. But what I do remember is him saying, do you do this often? And there was this sense of judgment that came into it. Mm-hmm. It was really icky. And I remember feeling really shitty after. And I was never someone that thought about that or felt that way. And I remember a friend of mine was like, he did it too. Why does it need to fall on you as the woman?
Yeah.
It's two people that had sex. Like, you know, just why is it always on the woman?
I was going to say, Natasha, you had a really funny episode, Do Old Dating Traditions Hold Up? And that episode was so interesting to me because I think if you think about it, all these rules are kind of imposed from like our ancestors.
Right.
And they're very antiquated. But I think as modern daters, we tend to not question them. We're just like, oh yeah, these are things that worked in the past. It was probably some like etiquette coach that came up with them or something for you to like get the village wife of your dreams. You have to wait however many days. And I think this is our chance, and with both of our podcasts, is to just question why things are the way they are, mm-hmm. and why do we need to do them a certain way.
Yep.
Absolutely. No, 100%. I mean, Julie, to, you know, piggyback off your story a little, I was telling, you know, I think people might remember on my podcast a while back, I had hooked up with somebody who's actually really famous. He's about to be really, really famous, like giant movie star famous. And we had hooked up, and I remember he wanted to do the like, oh, just 2 minutes, no condom, just 2 minutes. And I was like, no. And so he was like, oh, well, I don't have a condom. And I was like, oh, cool. I'm a fucking grown up who,
yeah,
who is cares about me. So I have one. And so I brought it out and he got like, he was like, oh, but you have a condom. And I was like, mm-hmm. And I was like, here you go, wrap that shit up. And like, but then yeah, he like had performance, like he was like being weird about it and he couldn't like basically come off. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. It was because of the condom. And I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry. But it was really because he got thrown that I had a condom.
Like, right. Like, so the woman like, shouldn't.
Yeah, yeah. Like I shouldn't be protecting myself from,
yeah,
like you think you're the first guy who's ever said just 2 minutes. No,
just two, oh my God.
Just a tip. Just a tip. Don't worry about it.
I didn't know that was even a thing though. Like, I oh guess my it God, never it's... occurred to me or something. I don't usually talk to my friends about this, but
oh
like,
my God,
I don't think I've ever thought, oh, maybe in 2 minutes you can't get pregnant.
Okay, so how many times I've heard the 2 minute thing.
I feel like this one definitely goes into ours of the 3 day rule. I'd love to hear your opinion on this, Natasha, because I think this one infuriates both UA and I a lot, because our opinion is if you like someone, don't fucking play games and just message them.
Yeah.
100%. I agree with that. I always admit that old me used to be the one who used to wait hours before I texted somebody. I was totally playing that game. But when I came out of that, that was during my commitment phobe phase. Mm. And then when I finally came out of that, it was me realizing like, wait, why was I, it was my insecurity. It was wanting to make somebody know that I wasn't available or whatever, which wasn't, it was my insecurity. And now I don't feel insecure, so I don't give a shit. If I have time, I will message you right away. I like messaging right away. And if I can't because I'm in a meeting or I'm actually working or doing something, I can't. But I actually usually tell somebody like, hey, I'm just about to get into some work. If I'm slow to respond, that's why. So like there's no, yeah, I just find like game playing doesn't benefit or help move a relationship forward. And mm-hmm. the faster you know somebody's interested, the faster you can make a decision if you want to stay or not. If they're not, tell them to fuck off. Like, get out of here.
If I can say also, as a guy, like one time I went out with this girl and she, and you know, I was used to the whole, oh, you shouldn't immediately call them the next day. You kind of got to give it a little time or space. You know, this is a, before a lot of apps and stuff. You know, everything was on OkCupid at the time. But like, you know, what happened was, is she was like, just call me tomorrow. And I was so relieved. I was like, I don't have to play yeah. this game with her. Like, I don't have to wait 2 days or 1 day for her to think I'm too into her, whatever that means. I mean, she's happy that I'm into her and I'm glad and I will call her tomorrow. You know, like everyone wins then if that's what you want.
Well, isn't it refreshing to have someone tell you that they're actually into you
yes.
instead of playing this game of who's least interested?
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
I think a lot of times women, because again, what we've been told is that we shouldn't be the one showing the interest and he's going to lose interest in us and all of that. But especially in this day and age with Me Too and just changing gender roles and masculinity, I think men do need that positive reinforcement that this is like a green light and I can keep going. Like I can ask them out again and I can make the move or whatever. And I don't think there's anything wrong with just saying I had a really good time and I enjoyed hanging out with you. Like there's nothing needy about that at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always at the end of a date, sorry, Adam, I just,
no, it's,
at the end of a date, I always, I don't wait. Like if somebody messages me first, great. But when I get home that night, I almost always am like, I say if I had a good time and I'm very like, hey, I had an awesome time, but I don't say like, I don't need to say like, let's go out again. I just right. say like, hey, I had an awesome time. You know, have a great night. Thank you.
Yeah.
Also a tip. If somebody is, if a girl is interested in a guy and she would like him to know that, and she would maybe even if it's after just the first date, like him to not be as interested in other girls that he might be talking to online or something.
Right.
It's good to show that like you're interested and you're bringing something to the table that you would like to go out with them again, because, you know, otherwise you end up dating someone who's some guy is juggling like, you know, multiple women because, you know, it's kind of from a guy's dating perspective, it's like you're messaging 1,000 people and you don't really know like when you'll hear back from any of right. them. A lot of their inboxes are probably maxed out or something, you know, on whatever dating app they're on.
For sure. And both, I mean, your podcast and our podcast, both of our podcasts have covered the pickup community. And isn't it just fucking exhausting to just play these games, to do these like mind tricks, Jedi mind tricks with each other? And at the end of the day, what are you getting? All you're getting is this fake interest from someone, because all you're doing is making them feel like they miss you or making them feel like you're unattainable. But that's not sustainable for a relationship, because if you carry forth with that relationship, you constantly have to make yourself unavailable.
Right. And I think that actually is a good segue to our other really bad advice we've gotten. And I'm actually thinking, Adam, what you just said makes so much sense here too. We always say this is not a numbers game. And that is very unpopular advice, because a lot of people believe it is a numbers game. And I think in a situation where people aren't transparent about how they're feeling and what they're thinking and showing that excitement, that's when it becomes a numbers game. To your point, Adam, as a man or a woman, you feel like you have to just keep filling your funnel, because you don't know
if you'll ever hear back. Yeah,
exactly. But if someone is just upfront and genuine, then it doesn't take meeting hundreds of people. Like, we know so many people that go on date after date and they don't go anywhere, where someone that might just really fine tune and get excited to meet someone, even if they have less prospects, their dating success rate might actually be higher.
Let's hold that thought for a second. We'll get right back to it. Confession, I have a secret about how I've been able to update my wardrobe with only high quality but affordable pieces these last few years. And now I have to let the secret out, because they're sponsoring this episode. It's called Quince. Yeah, if you know, you know. Quince has premium European linen dresses, gorgeous washable silk tops, luxurious cashmere, and the best part, they're priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands, because they partner directly with top factories. So no more middleman, and that's why it costs less to you. I know Julie got herself some nice cashmere pieces, and at only $50 a sweater, come on. And I recently ventured into home goods. I got myself some premium cotton percale sheets, ultra cooling, and just feels like a 5-star hotel every night. And it's so perfect for the upcoming hot months. So get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/dateable for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/dateable to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/dateable. Did you know that the cause of health issues with so many dogs is their food? That was so astounding for me to find out, because I tend to think my dog Mojo eats pretty well until I really researched the ingredients. And actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more health issues with dogs than ever before. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. I actually love giving Mojo this as a topper. It's like an extra treat for him. And I feel good that there are no fillers and it's air dried, so it retains more nutrients. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. And so can your fur baby. Go to BadlandsRanch/dateable and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com/dateable today.
Yeah, I mean, I remember being in an Uber once, and the driver was telling me, male driver, that it's a numbers game. And I remember laughing and being like, what? No, it's not a numbers game. And this is like years ago. So this was like, you know, slightly more naive me. And I was like, no, what do you mean? And then I sort of understood his point of view, in that for a guy, like on dating apps for, you know, a second, like girls will get a lot more matches on a dating app. For guys, they're swiping right on everybody. Like, they're not even thinking, do I like her? They're not reading a profile. They're just like, right. Mm-hmm. Because they're like
a lot of guys are, at least.
Right? It's a numbers game, because I'll swipe at 150 girls and maybe two will message me. Whereas for girls, definitely different, where, you know, I tell my girlfriends, dude, don't do that. Like, use a little bit more of your critical thinking and judgment. look at somebody's fucking profile, for example, like, can they form a sentence? Does that bug you that they don't know where to, that they don't know the difference between there and there? And, you know, like, it would bug me. Like, does he sound like a douchebag? Did he ask you for a dick pic? Or, you know, did he send a dick pic? So, like...
Did he ask you for one?
I know, did he ask you for one? That's a sign. You know, so I think it can vary for genders. I understand why people do it, but I think it's a flawed concept for sure.
I think it depends on when it is in the process, because I actually understand just swiping through profiles, and I admit I do that. Like, I don't read everyone's profile because I think there's too many variables on dating apps. You just don't know if someone's ever logging in there or what the activity is and all of that. But I do think where the not a numbers game falls into is that filtering process. And that's why I'm actually really excited that people might start to use like video dating a little more, because I think there's filling up the funnel that there's enough people and prospects in there. Because if you've no one in the funnel, it's going to be hard to find a date. But then once that funnel is getting filled, making sure that you're not meeting every last person and they're just blending together, but really being conscious and excited to meet that person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's being smart about the numbers game, because it's a numbers game only when you're able to balance all the people you're talking to. So it's science backed that you can only balance seven people at a time, and seven people on a very surface level conversation, that's all you can handle. And then for deeper conversations, your brain can only handle two people at a time.
Wait, so yes, it's a number. Seven people, like dates?
Seven people that you can have very shallow conversations with. Those are the seven conversations you can balance at one time. It's a lot. I agree. But for those conversations to be deeper, you can only do two at a time. So it's a numbers game if you're smart about the numbers.
Yeah, and I definitely hear the men out there, because we hear them, they're like, hey, I'm not getting any matches. So it is a numbers game. And we hear that. We don't want to say it's, I guess maybe it's a modified bad advice. It's not fully not a numbers game, but I think if you just are always going for quantity over quality, that's when you get in trouble. Like, we had someone on our podcast that we did an exit interview with, and he had so many matches on Hinge. I've never seen a guy with this many matches in my life, but none of them moved to a second date. And that's why we did an exit interview to call them to see why. Mm-hmm. And what I think the lesson here is that he was probably spreading too thin, and he wasn't going deep with enough people to like get a connection that would move to that next level, and then also be willing to take a chance, because he always thought he had more prospects coming.
Yeah, I mean, quality over quantity for sure. At some point, like you said, in the beginning, maybe you should date more than one person, but then at some point, I think if you are, it depends what phase you are in your life. If you're just trying to fuck around, great, then you don't have to.
Right.
But if you are actually sort of trying to be open to finding something of more quality, then you're going to have to put in a little bit of time.
I think also one thing is, because, you know, we're talking about the numbers game and things like that. And the question is what, you know, what are the things that people use to look at? And the first thing is usually the photo. I don't think, though, that that's necessarily wrong for people to use as a judgment, because if you're dating someone, you want to be attracted to them, at least, you know, somewhat physically, hopefully very much physically. But, you know, at the same time, you know, you then want to get the whole picture. You know, you want to see what their profile says or what their thoughts are, or, you know, dreams and so on. You know, like, I think those are all really important things, you know, but for that initial like thing, because, if you know, you want to be able to be happy sitting across the table from them at dinner, you know.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you brought up a sort of my segue to one of the other worst pieces of advice that I've heard. This isn't from my podcast, though. This is just in life. This was my parents, which I fucking hate. Though I think a lot of dating coaches
you hate
say this too.
You hate your parents?
No,
or
I
you
love hate- my parents.
Just want to clarify.
What's the advice that you hate?
Obsessed with my parents. This piece of advice I hate. But it's also stuff that, like, you hear a lot of cliche dating coaches and shit say, which is, looks fade. Don't focus on looks and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, suck my non-existent dick. Sorry.
Yeah. Right.
But like, anytime, I'm not saying anybody needs to be a 10. That's not what we're saying. They need to be attend to you.
Yes.
And that has to matter. Because like I see, you know, my parents, when they tried to say that to me and they tried to set me up with somebody that I was like, are you guys kidding right now? Like kidding. And then they were like, well, looks don't matter. And I said, oh, cool, cool, cool. And my parents, like, mind you, is for Indians, had like a love marriage back in their day. So, you know, they were progressive in their own way. Mm. And I said, so dad, like, what was the first thing you noticed about mom? And he's like, she was very beautiful. She was smart. She was, you know, she's very tough. She knows what she wants. Uh-huh. And then I'm like, and Ma, what did you like about dad? He was charming. He was very handsome. You know, he was really oh, cool. So fucking looks matter to you guys. Clearly, you're like constantly talking about like, oh, we matched so well. Like we made it. Mm-hmm. Like, so fuck you. And then they like, and with now they literally say it to me. They're like, no, we get it. Like looks matter. I was like,
there has to be chemistry, right? Yes. Like if there isn't, then you're just friends at that point. And that's not like a significant other, right?
Yeah, because you have to look at this person every day, right? Like even if you're in a fight, like even if you're not talking, at the very least, you're staring at each other, you know? And I need to personally at least not want to throw up looking at your face. I don't know. Like, I'm just saying, like, I need to feel like I am into the person. But that, again, that doesn't mean that I don't believe that that means the person needs to be a 10. Like,
no.
One of my boyfriends of 4 years was somebody that other people might not have considered a quintessential looker. Mm-hmm. But he was so hot to me. We had great chemistry. And I loved him. I was like obsessed with him. So,
yeah, it just needs to be attractive to you, I think, is the key.
Yeah, there's a Chinese saying. It's called Shun Yan. And it literally translates to smooth on your eyes, which is, I guess, could be easy on your eyes. But I take that as is just for your eyes only. This person is just smooth. There's nothing like when you look at them, you're like, just something very jarring. And I think my parents have said the same thing, Natasha. They're like, don't worry about the looks. Everybody's ugly when they're old, which is probably true at some point. But that's the beauty of dating when you're younger, is that you can't get excited about someone's looks, knowing that it could fade in the future. And so why not like take advantage of the looks when you have them?
I think there was a Sex of the City episode too that was like the memory of them. Even if they're like old when they're it's why like the memory of feeling excited.
Why are we skipping like 60 years of our life and like imagining at like 80, 90? Right. I'm like, it's fine. Honestly, I actually saw an amazing Instagram post yesterday, which was saying like women in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. And I think 40 was like Shakira, 50 was J-Lo, 60 was, I don't know who, 70, Vera Wang. I was like, Lord help me. She is gorgeous.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think the other flip side of it is I personally would not want to be with a guy that didn't find me attractive. So if you're holding on to a relationship because you feel like you should be because they have the right pedigree or whatever it is, but you have zero attraction to them, that's really not fair to that other person at all.
That's so horrible. True. Like when your kids are like, what did you like about mom? And he's like, well, I wasn't into her looks, but she had a great personality.
He's like, we have a purely platonic relationship.
And you know, I think a lot of people, they think about these things in terms of like, what will my family think if I introduce this person to them? Mm. And they think about like their grandma or something. And it's like, I don't know about you, but like, you know, my spouse's grandma, like she's like, this is your grandfather. And she'll point to a picture and he's like a hunk in the Navy or something. Yeah. Like he's a gorgeous looking guy. Like, you know, from, you know, back then, like, so that's great. Good for him, you know? But like at the same time, the fact that people try to act like you shouldn't care so much about that. But then look, grandpa, he was very attractive then, you know, or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, I keep wanting to just add that little button to, as a reminder for anybody listening, that we're not saying that somebody has to be an objective, there is no such thing as an objective 10. And I don't know, maybe Angelina Jolie or something like that. But outside of that, we're saying like, they should be attractive to you and it should matter for you that, you know, my best friend always asks me a question that I'll admit, like, there were people I wasn't totally attracted to that I gave, or I ended up in relationships with because of this weird thing in my head. But she then made me, like, think of it very differently. It's kind of gross, but she'll always say, like, after I come back from a date, she's like, so, did you get juicy goosey down there?
Like, vagina tingles. That's what we got it.
And then she's like, if you didn't, get the fuck out. And I'm like,
You know, I've totally been there before. I remember I dated this guy for a bit and he was great on paper. He was an objectively attractive guy, but for whatever reason, it just did not give me vagina tingles. And eventually I'm like, I can't fight this. Like, there's nothing that's going to make this work. And again, I think it comes back to what is fair to everyone in this situation, yourself, but also that other person.
But just be forewarned that we can't get hung up on certain characteristics, like women with the height thing. Let's just give it up for now because it's not. What's your minimum height requirement? How tall do you have to be to ride that ride?
Completely guilty as charged. Adam knows. I talk about this on the podcast.
What's your minimum height requirement?
It's gone down. Okay, like that's how I've become
compromise.
Been 5'10" plus.
Okay, how tall are you?
It's because I'm short and I'm thinking about future children. Not that I don't even want children, but I'm 5'2.5".
Hey, I also know two people, they're both under 5'10", and their kids are all like 6'2", 6'3". Yeah, so you never know.
You never know
what could happen.
Good of that is...
Okay, so we've had a lot of the bad advice. I think we should transition to the positives. What's the best advice we've ever heard?
Ooh, Natasha.
I gotta go with the OG queen, which is
Beyonce, Oprah,
Maya Angelou.
Okay.
Right. Which is when someone shows you who they are, believe them the first time.
Oh,
not the second, hallelujah. Not the third, not the fourth, not the fifth, the first time. And I usually tell people that, like, I actually almost guarantee people that you know exactly what the problem in your relationship will be within your first week. If you are actually paying attention, mm-hmm. you will know whether it's somebody telling you, you know, I work a lot,
mm-hmm.
or I haven't had a relationship before, or somebody being like, I mean, you know, guilty of being with the guy who on our first date said that you should know something about me. I'm divorced and I have rage issues. And me went, oh, he's being honest.
I can
honest.
Fix you.
I was like, he's so honest. That means he mustn't be that bad. Mm-hmm. You know, every relationship I had, and I've had a lot, I knew exactly what the problem would be.
Oh, yeah.
And I just didn't believe them. And mm-hmm. And whenever that is that you find out about that person, because it is hard to become aware of that in the, you know, it's sort of... We're probably a little bit more trained because of doing this, our podcasts, but most people might not be. And I think whenever you realize a behavior that's really off for you, believe that that's the behavior. Don't not trust it. Or if somebody's telling you straight, don't be like, no, they don't mean it. They totally know themselves more than you.
For sure. Right. There's a saying that, like, most relationships end the first red flag that was shown. And I feel like that has happened to me so many countless mm-hmm. times that I'm like, wow, in hindsight, I saw that on date one or right away. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you want to believe that that's not going to happen. But yeah, I think it's really important to tune into those.
I like to do the buffet test in the beginning of a relationship where you sit down and you think, am I treating this like a buffet where I'm picking and choosing which parts of this person I choose to consume and which parts I'm not using? But then that's not how a relationship works. It's not a buffet. It's literally a prefix meal. And you just eat whatever is given to you. So do the buffet test and you'll know.
Perfect.
Yeah, I love that. What's your guys? What's like a best advice?
I love this one because we say it all the time. You have to go through the trenches to just fully experience love. And we've had so many experts come on and say, love is a journey. And if you sit back and you think, gosh, it really is. Just because you find someone to love, that doesn't mean that journey ends. It's just the middle of your journey. And it's something that's constantly evolving. And if you're going through the trenches right now, if you feel like you're hitting rock bottom or this is a really dark period, just know that you're supposed to go through this in order to find that light at the end of the tunnel, because you will get there.
There was like someone that said a statement, you're exactly where you need to be right now. And I think that one has stuck with me through this. And it totally goes to what UA was just saying. It's like, you need to just recognize that it's okay if things aren't figured out, because things are never figured out. It's just a constant evolution all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's beautiful. I am obsessed with Eckhart Tolle, and he has this sort of, it's probably like my favorite quote of all time, but he says, every experience is for the evolution of your consciousness. How do you know this is the right experience? It's the experience you're going through right now. And it is sort of exactly that, like you're exactly where you're supposed to be. And you know, I'll say this, I agree with that. And I still don't wish all of it on everybody. Like as somebody who has, you know, I was in a very abusive relationship, that had me depressed for many years. It was physical, mental, emotional, every kind of abuse possible. I was very, very broken from it. Now looking back, I can go, man, I'm glad in a way. Like I secretly thank him. I would never tell him to his face. I secretly thank him for teaching me boundaries. I didn't know, I had no boundaries at all. And I just didn't know how to enforce them. And that taught me something. That said, I tell everybody, please don't do what I did. You didn't have to experience that to learn that that's not the kind of good person for you. Like, I don't have to go out and walk in front of a moving car to know that that's going to hurt. There are some aspects I'm like, yes, if you are in something, learn the lesson, but don't walk into a fire and think you're not going to get burned because, hey, you know, I'm just going to learn from it. And God bless, most of us can, but some of us, like without getting dark, can go into something that becomes very abusive. Mm-hmm. And I'm lucky I got out, but there are people who don't. So there's like a, you know, that's where I'm like, I get it to like 99%. There's that one sliver percent for me that's like, don't do all the bad things that I did.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like people always say too about our podcast, and I'm sure this holds true for yours too. It's like one of the reasons they like it is they can hear all these experiences so they don't have to necessarily go through all of them on their own. And they can be a little more conscious of those red flags or whatever it may be, or just be conscious that they're learning from their mistakes, but not repeating them over and over and over again. I think the part about the journey, though, it's sometimes you do just have to do it yourself. Like, what, no matter, I don't know about you guys, there's been so many times that I've given advice to friends or they've given it to me, and you're like, yep, in theory, I get that, but because I'm the one in it, it's different. Yeah. So I think there's some of that that's just never going to go away. I agree with you, Natasha. It's a line, though. But I think the part that really sticks with the journey is when people are just down about being single. Like, maybe it's not necessarily a bad experience, but it's, oh my God, I'm X age, I'm 30 and I'm single. Like, what's wrong with me? All of that. And I think where we really come in with this is that no one has it figured out. It's a journey. It's okay if it doesn't happen by certain timelines. Like, not everyone is on the exact same page, like path. Find what works for you.
Yeah. I think
go ahead, Adam.
I think a lot of what is going on with this is dealing like sort of like with fate and people's thoughts on, you know, what will happen, what happened was meant to happen. And that doesn't mean that it's unavoidable. If, you know, it doesn't mean that you have to repeat perhaps these situations. You can learn and adjust and keep moving forward. I think there is a danger to people sometimes when they start rationalizing it. Maybe it makes them feel better in the short term, which is, you know, nice to feel like, oh, well, it was meant to be this way, or, you know, this worked out for the best, you know, now I know something, you know, that I didn't know before. You want to learn, but I think there's an interesting line there, you know, also.
We had Mark Manson on our podcast a few weeks ago, and he says something that really resonated with me. He said, when you face an issue, or problem, don't try to fix it, evolve from it.
Yeah.
So next time when you see a red flag or see something happening in your relationship, ask yourself, how do I evolve from this? And I think that's where the line can be drawn, because when we try to fix something, that's when we go deep into that rabbit hole. That's when we, right, that's when we put so much pressure on ourselves that if we don't fix it, we become failures in our own mind. So if we evolve from it, then we can just relieve some of that pressure and think about, okay, how do I just get myself out of this 1% more, 1% each time, right, baby steps.
Right.
Yeah. And I also think, you know, changing sort of the lens of how we look at what trenches are, right? Mm-hmm. For example, like we think going through the trenches means you have to experience negative things. But the mm-hmm. trenches could also be making the yeah. decision that I don't want to experience this, which is hard. Mm. I think that's harder to do sometimes than going through the shitty experience, because having the discipline to say, like, I mean, you guys must have done this now that you have like this podcast and successful and all these things. Like, I've gone on dates with people and I'm like, fuck, I want to go down this path, but I'm not going to.
Yep,
I'm
not touching that.
And it's so hard. I'm like, fuck, did I make the right decision? But knowing and trusting and trusting myself in that is the trenches, is like me mm-hmm. going through the trenches. It's just a different evolutionary process of the trenches. Like you don't physically mm-hmm. have to be in it anymore. You could be in it emotionally and intellectually.
That's when you start to really evolve, because I 100% agree with you. We had actually one of my past dates on the podcast to talk about our dates, which is what we love doing those types of episodes. But mm-hmm. I recognize I was his first date in 12 years because he had just gotten out of a divorce. First time ever on a dating app. We were just in totally different places. And I recognized it immediately, even though like we had a good chemistry mm-hmm. and banter and I liked him. I was just like, this isn't going to work. I just knew we were not in the same page. And I think it's honing in on that and not being, it's all about trusting your gut is really what it comes down to. I think a lot of times we don't want to put limitations. And we talked about this with Mark Manson too. It's like boundaries feel scary because they're basically losing prospects, especially sometimes when it feels like prospects are hard. It's hard to find that person. But I think your gut always knows what's right. And it's really, at least for me, when I've gotten into troubles, when I don't listen to it. And I think 100%. That I can change someone.
I think it's important to remember that everyone's on a different timeline, you know,
yes.
The people you date, but you are too. And even your friends and family and things like that, you know, like I know some people that, you know, they're like, you know, I'm in my early 30s and I feel like I need to start, you know, looking into getting a house and things like that. And, you know, hey, I mean, it'd be nice, but, you know, not everybody's able to prioritize that right now. You know, a lot of people are more interested in starting a family or more interested in getting their professional career going or, you know, whatever other things there are. But you don't want to hold yourself to these arbitrary standards that are sort of just based on other people.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yep. That seems like a good segue to other good dating advice.
Yeah.
What's another your next one?
I was going to say, oh man, I have two, but which one to go with?
Yeah, pick one.
We'll go with the simpler one. Love grows. Mm. I used to not, I mean, like every young person, not, it's not a girl thing, you know, I used to be like, no, you're either in love or you're not. but you realize like in the beginning, you don't really even know what love is. And yes, you can feel like an immense attraction, infatuation, even an early stage of love, but I think it can get deeper and it can get even more as time goes on and you build intimacy and you, you know, really share with each other that I just don't think you can write in the beginning. I mean, not all of us have the notebook type of love story, you know? And I've been with people and seen that happen for me where like it started one way and I actually was like, oh my God, I kind of like this person even more going forward as I've like learned about them. But sometimes I think people are like, they need to feel all of it in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think that that's love, like that love at first sight kind of thing. Like I'm like, I don't personally believe in it. I believe it's lust at first sight.
Yeah.
And then you could feel an awesome connection with somebody, but that love kind of grows. If that makes
sense. I think it's an interesting one because I'm thinking about what you said earlier about that you still need to be attracted. So I agree with you that love grows over time. And I think especially it's tough when you've ended a relationship, when there's so much history built up to go to that next person where you're kind of starting from scratch. And in your mind, though, you're kind of expecting it to be a smooth transition, which isn't realistic. But I think the part that I'm not sure about is if there just isn't that baseline connection and chemistry to begin with. I think if you had a good enough time, you should go on a second date, even if there wasn't fireworks. But if you really were just like, this is so painful, I don't want to be here, or I'm just not attracted and I don't see this happening, I don't think love can grow that way.
100% agree. I think the difference does become a little of like, is the initial feeling and connection love at all? Or is it a chemistry and attraction? And is love, and I guess it comes down to like, what is the definition of love for all of us, right? Like for me, love is an action. And so that's a personal thing. To some people, it's not. To some people, it's a feeling. And for me, it's like, well, to get me to do something out of real love for you probably takes a little time because I don't fucking know you in the beginning.
Right.
So I'm going to do stuff, but I'm probably not going to like go out of my way or like, you know, for example, in the beginning of meeting somebody, if suppose you met somebody your first week and they're somebody close to them passed away, would you go to the funeral versus if you know them 6 months from now, would you go to the funeral? It's like that sort of development of intimacy, I guess, is what I mean with.
Got it. So it's less about like attraction growing. It's
And I think that always comes back down to like why we always assume love is this like attraction feeling, blah, 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 which it is. Like I'm saying it's very fucking important to have that, but that's not love. I'm sure we've all been there and been like, hey, I felt a lot of fucking attraction to somebody, but it didn't mean that they amounted anything to me or I amounted anything to them.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And Natasha, based on what you just said also, as someone who's been in that exact situation of like being early in a relationship and then there was a death in their family and it's like the question of like, do I go or do I not? Because I'd only been dating them like a month. But at the same time, we'd gone out a handful of times. I wanted to be there for her. It was someone who is now my wife, so it was the right choice.
Mm.
But, you know, the other thing, though, is that, like, you know, you don't really know, like, you know that once you go to an event like that, their family is going to start saying, like, who's this guy? It must be serious, you know, or something. And you're like, it's only a month. I hope it's serious enough. Like, you know, but worst case scenario, you're there for them, and that's really, you know, good to be there, you know, and so on. But, you know, I think you don't really know, like I honestly, when I first met my wife, it's like I didn't know what exactly I wanted in a wife, you know, like that's the thing is because like, what is the definition of a spouse, you know, and what character, everyone's got a different answer, you know, everyone's got different ideas of what they want. And
mine is Michael B. Jordan.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Your dream wife.
I think that's a good segue to our last one that we have. And it's kind of building off what Adam just said, is that so much of it, it's, you said, I don't know what I want in a wife. And a lot of this is getting to know yourself first. And I think the realization and best advice that we had is that a relationship is not going to make you happy. It can help you be happy, but it's not going to make you happy. And if you're looking to be happy, the best place to start is yourself. And we had this amazing guest. She wrote this book. Her name's Amy Spencer. She wrote this book, Meeting Your Half Orange. And she basically had like very, like basically every opposite dating advice that you would ever have. She's like, don't get back out there. Like, just do what you do. And like, don't go to a singles event because you feel like you should go there. Go bake if that's what's going to make you happy. Yeah, you might not meet a man that way, but like, you need to hone in on what makes you happy. Because ultimately, if you're trying to get into a relationship to be happy, why not just beeline to the happy? And you'll probably attract someone in that best state anyways over that desperate state of just always looking for someone.
We also had a guest on, Heidi Ezern, who wrote a article that was called Why You're Still Single? Why
You Can't Find the One.
Why You Can't Find the One. Yes. That's it. And it, basically her whole point was you putting all that pressure on this person that you just met, thinking that they're going to make you so happy by being in a relationship with them, is setting them up for failure. And this is so, it goes hand in hand with the other dating advice that we were just talking about, where love grows, is Mark Manson said this too, love is not enough. And that's what that statement really means to me is love is not the end all be all. Just because you fall in love with someone doesn't mean your debt goes away. Doesn't mean all of a sudden you're healthy and all of a sudden your life is perfect. That's when you should start building a life with someone and you have to work at it. So having this knowledge, knowing that love is not enough and knowing that you can't wait for someone to make you happy will free you from all the pressure that you put on yourself and this imaginary person.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure all of our shows have definitely tackled that of like embracing just being you and being single, if that's what it is. Like, as somebody who has gone through the gamut of, you know, being a hardcore relationship girl who then was like a massive commitment phobe, who's now reformed commitment phobe, like, I had to go through those phases where I had to just like, especially when I was coming out of being a commitment phobe and I had been making such bad decisions, like I was just purposely with the wrong person, subconsciously, you know, where I didn't realize it. I had to learn like, what the fuck is wrong? Like, I just need to be alone. And it was only when I took complete time off was I able to evolve and like start making better choices. I even did it last year. Again, I just stopped. Yeah. I was like, I'm done. I'm just really checked out right now. I don't want to date to date. My family was like, why aren't you dating? I'm like, it's not like there's some shortage of dudes. It's just, certain other things are important and I need to fill my cup first. Mm-hmm. And so much of what we do at the end of the day comes out of not feeling enough and insecurity and lack of worth. And we're always looking for somebody else to fill that in us. And they can for time being. That's why they always say like the first 6 months feels amazing. It's like a honeymoon because you are filling that. But it's like anything else where at some point the novelty will fade away. And that the lust and the infatuation will fade away. And then you'll be left with your debt and your addiction and your depression and your
reality.
Yeah, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And nobody's saying you need to be fully whole, because I don't think any of us will ever be totally whole. But how good enough can we get before, you know, we start realizing like, hey, I love me first. And when you do that, you can make decisions like, when do I want to have sex? Do I really want to meet you this Saturday? I'm really fucking tired. Or I want to go hang with my girls or whatever. Like, you can make these small, seemingly small decisions with a place of like self-worth and, you know, feeling whole. Like, if this person leaves, you're not going to die. Like, you're good.
It's liberating. Right? Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, I think especially during this like whole quarantine period too, it's brought up a lot of stuff for people. And I think this is not saying that relationships aren't important, because I do think relationships can help you. It can bring happiness, because any relationship, either whether it's like with family members or friends, like I think as humans we are bound to relationships, but that can't be the only thing that's holding on there. And I think with this whole quarantine period, it's given a lot of people time to reflect and do some of that inner work that you were mentioning, Natasha. And it's not a one-time thing. I'm glad that you called that out. Like, it continues your entire life pretty much. But also, I think like in the time of quarantine, especially if you're single and alone, and like, for example, I'm living on my own, there's something very empowering and freeing that I'm fine doing this. I'd prefer to be with a partner, but I'm fine on my own and I'm mm-hmm. happy on my own and I'm okay on my own. And that allows the right partner that complements you to come in, not just anyone that you're like grasping for.
Mm-hmm. This is a unique opportunity. You know, everyone right now is not, a lot of us like aren't able to do our normal work. We aren't able to see people that we normally see, friends and family included. We really are getting to kind of understand and get to know ourselves, you know, and I think it's good for people to reflect on that while this kind of rare occasion comes up, you know, if there is a positive, which, you know, overall there's not, but the positive could be that, you know, people get some self-understanding in terms of what they want and what they're looking for, and they find someone who, you know, who compliments them. Mm-hmm. But you got to remember though that the person doesn't necessarily fill a void either.
Yeah, I mean, something that that I've said before on the pod is, if you find somebody, great. If you don't find somebody, great. Like, it should never be that one is better right. than the other reality. And the truth is, and this is also something I've mentioned, that like, we're every single human is at one point in their life going to go through a period of being alone. It is a known fact of whether, you know, for me, I've gone through many periods of that where I had to be completely alone, especially after the abusive relationship. I was sick for many years that people didn't know about. I was alone. Like, I was lying in bed like, oh, okay, I'm 21. I'm going to die. Mm. And I had to realize that when all the noise goes away and all the people go away, you're only left with yourself. And that can happen early in your life or that can happen late in your life, which is like, hey, I've been with my partner for 70 years. One is going to die before the other. So right, somebody's yeah. going to experience a moment of, and even your moment of death is alone. And so, but right now, the interesting thing is, because when I used to say that, people used to be like, yeah, okay, when are you going to experience time alone? I'm like, fucking quarantine.
Yeah.
Now,
seriously,
fucking the entire world is going through a period where you are, for many of us, are alone. And the experience is alone. And whether that's in your studio apartment, staring at the walls, not being able to go out, or living in a house with somebody you don't love, you're alone, you know, like mm-hmm. you could even love them and still the experience is yours. And that's yeah. where you have to realize the experience is yours and all these other things, including people are fillers and parts of the experience, but the overall experience is yours.
And even in your recent episode about loneliness, you distinguish there is a difference between being alone and feeling lonely. Mm-hmm. They're completely different things.
Yeah.
So it's during this time, some of us may be alone, but we can still feel like we're amongst other people as well.
100%. 100%.
Cool. Well, this was so fun. I'm glad that we were able to really go down the best and the worst that we got.
You guys are awesome.
So are you.
Where can people find your guys' podcast?
So many places. Easiest is our website, dateablepodcast.com. That's DATEABLE. It's like date able. We're abling you to date. But also we're like on iTunes and
Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, you know, all the ones, pretty all much any possible podcast
app.
And then what about for Kind of Dating?
Same. We are on all of the major podcast apps. So wherever you get it, and we're at Kind of Dating on all the socials.
Yeah, we are also at Dateable Podcast on social too.
Yay.
Dog wanted to say hi. He was whining the whole time.
Wait, we are not totally done if you'll give me an extra couple minutes.
Yeah.
We'll
do a segment called Six Questions. Guys, are you ready for your six questions?
I don't know, but I'll try.
I guess we are.
Like rapid fire. Don't overthink it. Whatever first fucking thing that comes in your head, say that.
Cool.
What is the first thing you notice about a potential partner?
Ooh, their smile.
Oh, I was going to say smile. Then I'll go with forearms. I love forearms. I don't know why. Forearms are so sexy.
Or big, what specific?
Like, yeah, like veins. I like looking at veins. Yeah. Mm. Something really sexy about that. Yes, Adam.
Can I throw out one more hair?
Please. Oh, okay.
Can I have a good head of hair?
Okay. I have TikTok videos in my head. What's one deal breaker?
Oh, that's a good one. Narrow-mindedness. Someone who's just so stuck in their own ways and who just, it's like, no, things have to be this way or I feel this way and I'll never change my mind. I can't stand that.
It's a good one.
What turns you on?
Forearms.
I mean, so much. But I think physical touch, like, especially if you're on a first date and someone kind of, we'll have to see how this plays out after coronavirus. But I think, like, when you're on a first date and someone gives you that, like, touch on your arm, there's, like, something electrifying about that.
I love it when someone just takes control, who's like, I'm taking you out Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Let's go here. It's just, it feels so, feels nice to be taken care of.
And throw down in the bedroom too. I was thinking control. That's where I thought you were going, but.
That was one of your strengths and one of your weaknesses in relationships.
Ooh, dang. Okay. We went there. I'll go with this. We'll do back and forth. Strength first. So I think my biggest strength in a relationship is constantly evolving with the relationship. Mm. I've never been stagnant and I hate feeling complacent. So I love pushing a relationship forward.
I think my best and worst is probably the same, is that I'm very empathetic and caring. And sometimes I'll put someone before myself is probably like the downside of that. But I can also be a phenomenal girlfriend because I'm such a Cancer and so caring and sentimental.
Hey, listeners, have you met Julie Kravchik? She's single and ready to mingle. She's the best girlfriend ever. I think my biggest weakness is pride. I let pride get in the way all the time. During fights, I'm like, fine, we're done. Or, you know, I just like, I have to win. And I'm with this current relationship, I'm learning a lot about just, it's not about winning. It's about evolving.
Definitely. What is love?
I think love is wanting someone to be happy and caring about them, even if that means that that's not, you aren't going to have a life together. Like, if you put someone in their own happiness above everything else, like maybe not above your own, I'm not saying above your own self and your journey, but if you really care about someone deeply, you just want the best for them. And it's not, again, about winning or losing or whatever that is. You just want them to be happy.
Yeah, that's a really great answer. I would say love to me is fully consuming and digesting someone, all of them, every piece of them, and not doing the buffet effect, you know, picking and choosing, just accepting them as a whole for everything that they are.
Yes.
And last question, besides I love you, what three words would you want your partner to tell you?
Oh, that's a good
one. I'm going to rip this off from my brother's wife's dad gave this toast at their wedding. And he said that when he knew my brother was the right one for his wife or his daughter was when he didn't say, I love you, but I'm not going anywhere. Maybe that's not three words, but it's like, I'm not leaving. You know, I'm sticking with
that. Love that.
Oh, that's such a good one. Shows such a level of commitment.
Yeah.
I love it when a partner says, I miss you. I think there's that's the second best feeling in the world to love is to miss someone.
Yeah. That's beautiful. Well, that was it.
We
survived.
Those are great questions. I'm going to have to write those down.
Yay. Guys, thanks for doing this.
Thank you. Can we do our ending the way that we typically end episodes?
Please.
Stay Dateable.
The Dateable Podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts you'll love at frolic.media/podcasts.
Want to continue the conversation?
First, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter with the handle at Dateable Podcast. Tag us in any post with the hashtag Stay Dateable, and trust us, we look at all those posts. Then head over to our website, datablepodcast.com. There you'll find all the episodes, as well as articles, videos, and our coaching service with vetted industry experts. You can also find our premium Why series, where we dissect, analyze, and offer solutions to some of the most common dating conundrums. We're also downloadable for free on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Overcast, Stitcher Radio, and other podcast platforms. Your feedback is valuable to us, so don't forget to leave us a review. And most importantly, remember to stay dateable.